this is Julianne Good, and this is Psych 101. Thanks for joining me. This is the year-end wrap-up, so I'm deciding to make this going to be an experimental sort of show. I would like anybody to call in during the show, make their comments, have their questions about anything that's come up with them psychologically during the year or anything that's gone in the news. I was looking through different sites for newsworthy items for this year, and usually they'll have like a top 10, you know, these are the biggest news stories of the years, like, you know, like CNN or something, and it was all over the place. So I kind of pulled together my own situation here, and I hope you like it, and if it works, it works great. If it doesn't, oh well, it was an experiment, right? Anyways, the number to call in and join me is 800-893-9562. Again, that's 800-893-9562. I would love if you would call up and let's talk about your year. My year was pretty fascinating. I finished up my master's degree in marriage and family therapy. I'm now doing my internship, and it is a really long process for any counselor in the state of California to do this. It's 3,000 hours worth of intern work. A lot of it is not paid, or a lot of it's paid under what we would normally charge as being counselors and therapists. So I started doing my counseling work with a lot of kids beginning this year, and that was really interesting. And, you know, just hanging out with the parents, hanging out with the kids, and trying to figure out, well, how can I change the direction that they're going in, and so they don't get into as much trouble at school or at home, and, you know, everything's a little more peaceful in both places. My personal process this year has been pretty incredible. It's been a lot of self-growth and a lot of determination, because there was one semester that I took, it was four classes, and it was a lot of work and a lot of paperwork, getting everything finished up, and then doing a study abroad over to Vienna, Austria again, and taking a fantastic three-week trip over to Europe, which was just completely life-changing. I recommend anybody that can do that to go and travel abroad, because it is just so mind-blowing the way other people think, you know, and live. And it's just so much different than what we're used to over in the United States. So I definitely recommend that. My personal process has been, you know, huge growth. I'll letting go of a lot of old baggage, a lot of situations that had been hanging around my neck for a long, long time. So, you know, and I did my own therapy work. I did some work, it's called EMDR, with the with brain spotting. So what it is, if anybody's listened to the EMDR programming, what it does is it reprograms your midbrain, which is the amygdala, hippocampus, that area. That area really has all of your memories ingrained in it. So if you've been through any kind of heavy situation in your life, going and doing that kind of work changes the way that you think and the way that you deal with life, period. So I highly recommend that kind of work. So I, you know, I'm definitely a guinea pig and a consumer of psychology. And I think it benefits anybody, even if you have a problem that's, you know, you don't think it's, you know, too serious. Hopefully you do some preventative maintenance and go and get some counseling, or talk to a good friend that you can really trust, and you trust their judgment. It, you know, that's what I would recommend, definitely, for anybody. Just connect up and you know, keep yourself healthy mentally and emotionally. It's so important. So I'm going to go through some information that I found on the internet about some psychological situations that happened this year and some research. And some of it's pretty fascinating. Some of it's actually kind of funny. So again, if you would like to join me, the number is 800-893-9562. Call up at any time. And if I'm in the middle of something, you can interrupt me. I'm cool with that. So, so I found this on livescience.com, and I thought that was pretty interesting. It's called All About You, Top 10 Human Nature Stories of 2013. It says, human beings are fascinating animals, capable of intense love or boiling hatred, deep contention or flagrant debauchery, selfless service or self-serving acts. Psychologists, neuroscientists, sociologists, and other students of the human condition reaped a bounty of knowledge about the inner workings of today's Homo sapiens in 2013. So this one is, the number one is politics determine where you live. And it says people segregate themselves by political leaning. I guess whether or not you believe that, I don't know. How many people are really political anymore? And I think a lot of people have just given up politics, especially this year with the Congress fighting amongst themselves, especially with Obamacare. That was pretty crazy, right? So anyways, they figure that people do that because they want to fit in. You know, it's always the, you know, if I don't like the way that my neighbors think or lean towards, I'm going to just move because I can't handle it. And I can understand. I mean, I'm from the Midwest and I definitely wanted to get out of there as soon as possible. That was pretty conservative, and I'm not that conservative, really. I mean, once it comes to certain things, I definitely have to be conservative. But anyways, so the next one is hormones influence human attraction. I like this one. This is pretty interesting. This is, humans may not be slaves to their biology, but basic biochemical drives do play a role in modern life. One study this year found that women may have a stronger sex drive during periods when they're more fertile, but work and their partner's desire can overrule these urges. And a study in psychoneuroendocrinology. Now, there's a mouthful, right? Psychoneuroendocrinology. Wow. Revealed that women taking birth control pills prefer men who have less masculine faces, but that past research suggests masculine traits in men are linked to offspring with better immune systems. So I guess women, if you're out there and you're looking for that mate, you want to have multiple children with, go and look for one that's, you know, a man that looks more masculine, okay? I guess this is what this research is saying, so. And a third study found that when women are at their peak fertility, they're drawn to the smell of manly testosterone-rich men. I like that one. Manly testosterone-rich men. Wow. So I wonder if they can bottle that up, right? I don't know. But they're still doing a lot of research on that. So this is just the, you know, beginning conclusions of the whole study. And this one I found interesting because I'm, you know, definitely found that I'm kind of experiencing this one. New type of boredom is discovered, and I never knew this. Okay, according to this, this is five types of boredom. I always thought there was just one, but they're breaking it down for us here. It says, psychologists have identified as many as five distinct types of boredom, and this year they added strong feelings of apathy. The other types of boredom include indifferent boredom, which is feeling relaxed and fatigued but cheerful, calibrating boredom, just wanting to do something but not knowing what, searching boredom, actively thinking of things to do, and reactant boredom, feeling unhappy, angry, or aggressive. And he said this last one, the reactant boredom, is supposed to be the most detrimental to your health because obviously, I mean, it's, you know, you're taking it, you know, your basic situation of boredom, and then you're just spewing out that you're really not too happy underneath at all and taking it out on others, which is not good. So the next one here is psychopaths feel empathy but help others. Now this one I thought was like, really? Because most of us, when we think about psychopaths, yeah, I mean, the, you know, if we watch any kind of crime stories or something, I mean, they're really out there and they're deviant and they're, you know, do horrible things and don't have any remorse for them, right? This study said that they've done brain scans on psychopaths while they're watching others experience pain, and it suggested that they were actually capable of empathy, though they seem to be able to switch it on and off. So there's a problem right there, right? So unrelated research suggests that having the psychopathic tendency to manipulate people may be advantageous in certain situations. And other research suggests that heroes and psychopaths might have something in common, which is fearlessness, which I'm gonna, you know, get to some other research on that that compares psychopaths to presidents. Some of them, I mean, that's kind of scary if you think about it, right? But that was the common factor, was the fearlessness. So, and it says many psychopaths have altruistic sides and many heroes have a bad streak. So, yeah, I guess it goes both ways. But I think most people had the, you know, the perception that any kind of psychopaths just have absolutely no feelings at all, and that's why they do the things that they do. So, but I guess new research is saying now they actually do have a little bit empathy, at least some of them, at least the ones that they researched. I don't know how they got them in for brain scans. Maybe they took some of the prisoners or something on that one and had to research that one a little bit more. So the next one is babies are born with consciousness. And this is pretty interesting. It says infants can experience consciousness as early as 5 months old. And they have consciousness for what they see. So a separate study found that the act of being born triggers the development of the brain's sensory system. So although you think, you know, babies when they're born and stuff, they're just kind of like little blobs and stuff, they actually have some stuff going on. But yeah, it's hard to, I don't know how they could sit there and figure out the research on this, but that's some pretty brilliant people who can figure this one out. The next one I thought was pretty funny. Valley girl talk is everywhere. But then they say, well, of course, it's just in Southern California. But now they're saying, no, it's also in Australia, New Zealand. But they call this uptalk. And it's still happens in Southern California, which it is pretty common out here. It's kind of funny, but and it says that men are starting to do it also, but it's demonstrating the prevalence of this could combat negative stereotypes of its speakers as being ditzy or confused. So I guess if you hear the little valley girl talk, don't just assume that you know that they're not intelligent at all. I guess that's what it's trying to tell us here. So next one is brain wiring explains men's and women's differences, and that men and women have their brains wired differently, which is true. I mean, this is, and I studied this in neuropsychology, very fascinating. Then you wonder why we have communication problems. It's because we're just not communicating on the same wavelength, right? And this finding was sitting there saying, just don't assume the idea that all men are better navigators and all women have better verbal skills. You know, that's, you know, throwing that one out. So, and it's saying that they need to be doing more research on this, but you know, the whole situation is the most men have, you know, bigger brain sizes than women do anyways. So that's part of the situation, obviously. So the next one, Now, this one, I don't know if I agree with this one or not, because I'm kind of on the fence on this one. They're stating that more guns are linked to more gun violence. There's, you know, the situation that has been brought up in the media time and time again about, you know, gun control after mass shootings. And a lot of people are saying, you know, well, yeah, control the guns. But obviously, I mean, they're still on the black market and, you know, criminals can get the guns so easily nowadays. So it's interesting. I've heard some of the reports from other countries like Canada and Switzerland and a lot of the other European countries where, you know, where every household has a gun. But they are under lock and key, and they're inspected, and they have to be stored just properly. And with a lot of these countries, the gun violence is actually below the United States. So that, I think, you know, that they should really be researching on that versus just, you know, just tossing away the guns, because that's, we, you know, this is reality. It's just not going to go away, unfortunately. But and their correlation to this was from a Boston University research of gun ownership and gun homicides in all 50 U.S. states from 1981 to 2010 found a robust correlation between the two, between gun ownership and gun violence. So, but again, I don't know. I'm on the fence with that one. So, all right. So the next one is, your caveman instincts get the best of you. For as intelligent as we think we are sometimes, this research is saying, maybe not. You know, you still have that really, primitive brain. You know, it's the hindbrain. It's over by your neck area, and it's, you know, it triggers off that fight or flight reactions, and according to this, they figure that, you know, this hasn't, you know, disappeared entirely, which I would agree with, you know, and it says, it can even get into the arena of, you know that you should be eating your vegetables, but you're going to be going for the Big Mac, and, you know, so we want what we want, right? And the last one on this is, do you really know your close friends? This is kind of interesting. It says, people may think they know their friends inside and out, but that may not be the case. Two common biases give rise to frequent misunderstandings. Humans tend to project their own intentions and wishes onto others, and people are also swayed by the crowd. These biases can lead to serious confusion in which two people end up doing something that neither wants just because they think the other person is game. So it says, if there's anything to take away from this year, it's that people don't understand themselves nearly as well as they think. And I would agree with that. You know, I think honestly that's one of the best things that you can do for yourself is really know yourself inside and out, the good, the bad, the ugly, everything. Just be honest with yourself, you know, and just, you know, make changes where you need to make changes. It's always a good thing, right? If you would like to join me with this conversation, the number is 800-893-9562. Again, that's 800-893-9562. We'll see what happens tonight, right? I decided to do the solo venture tonight because a lot of the psychologists that I have worked with are out of town, and they're just doing holiday stuff like a lot of people are. So we will see what happens, right? And hopefully you join me. Well, let's hit up some other psychology stories of this year. I thought there was some pretty fascinating stuff here. All right. I thought this was pretty funny. Humans aren't the only apes to have a midlife crisis. All right. Now, I don't know what exactly a midlife crisis would look like in an ape, but I know what looks like in women and men that have gone through it. It's almost like a second childhood again. It's temper tantrums and moodiness and not such happy times. But they did some research with these apes, and they said that they had all of the signs at about age 30, which for an ape is like midlife cycle. So, but yeah, it was pretty interesting. It said that they go through like what's called a U-shaped curve. So like, things are really good and things start, you know, peaking down and stuff around, yeah, about four, you know, ages 40 to 55 for adults, right? And things start changing, too many responsibilities, hormone changes and everything else. And yeah, so, but it does get better. And that's what these scientists are saying. So, yeah. So the next one on this, I like this one. Receiving a compliment has the same effect as receiving cash. Now that's good, right? I mean, compliments are very cheap compared to money, right? And you can give those anytime. But I like this, that they said from this one study that scientists did, it was, it seems as though praise provides the right memory boost for the brain to more efficiently consolidate learning while we're snoozing. That's good. Need better memory, right? So receiving a cash incentive appears to trigger the same effect. And it says, be sure to use compliments as a means to encourage learning new skills. So if you're in any position where you're trying to teach somebody something, praise them, and they'll help them to learn much easier. I think that's what this one's trying to say. And that's, it makes you feel better. It makes the your student feel better, right? And I think we all need more compliments in daily life, right? It's just a nice warm fuzzy to get compliments. It doesn't cost us anything, and that's a great thing. The next one is, can we one day switch off bad habits in our brains? Now, that's a good question. I mean, what bad habits would you take away if you possibly could? I think I would probably stop procrastinating so much. I think that would be a really, really good habit to get rid of. You know, I find myself making excuses and, you know, trying, you know, just not getting on with the day. So that would be the bad habit I would get rid of, most definitely. But scientists have found a small region in the brain's prefrontal cortex, which is, you know, the front of your brain. And it's most thought and planning occurs in that area, which is like your forehead area, is responsible for moment-by-moment control of which habits are switched on at a given time. And it says, old habits die hard, and that's because they are deeply wired into our brains. But it's most of the times it's not bad, it's just maybe annoying. But then there's a certain people who have obsessive-compulsive disorder and definitely need to have some process going in there and changing those kind of messages so that they can get on with their lives. So that would be nice that, you know, sooner or later that you'd be able to fine tune your own brain and turn those off and get on with life, right? And it says in here that it appears that old habits can be broken, but they aren't forgotten. They're replaced by new habits, but the old habit is still lurking. And it seems that like a master switch in your brain favors new habits over old ones. So I guess if you're going to be, you know, doing like, you know, the New Year's resolutions, this would be a good time to, you know, kind of figure out and make a plan for that, right? And try to replace those bad old habits, because I think a lot of times they can be, it's a lot of determination, right? And, you know, just stick-to-itiveness. Now this one I thought was pretty weird. And I'm sure a lot of you who had been following this over the last few years on and off remember the story. And it was the senator from the Midwest, Michelle, I forgot her last name, but her and her husband, had one of these clinics that he claimed that he could, you know, program the gayness out of somebody, which, you know, this story right here is where this whole thing started, right? Okay. In 2001, Dr. Robert Spitzer, a psychiatrist and professor of Columbia University, presented a paper. And he presented it at a meeting of the American Psychiatric Association, which is a huge organization. It's the, you know, the whole governing body for the psychiatric profession. But he did a paper on what was called reparative therapy for gay men and women. And he claimed that by undergoing reparative therapy, gay men and women could change their sexual orientation. Spitzer had interviewed 200 allegedly former homosexual men and women that he claimed had shown varying degrees of such change, and all the participants provided Spitzer with self-reports of their experience with therapy. Spitzer, now 79 years old, was no stranger to the controversy surrounding his chosen subject. 30 years later, he had played a leading role in removing homosexuality from the list of mental disorders in the association's diagnostic manual. Clearly, his interest in the topic was more than a passing academic curiosity. It wouldn't be a stretch to say he seemed invested in demonstrating that homosexuality is changeable, not unlike quitting smoking or giving up ice cream. But the whole situation is, he just, you know, did this research by phone. He did not do it in a laboratory. He did not do it in an ethical way, to put it honestly. And then he said, now in 2012, last year, he regretted that he had done that, and he owed the community an apology. And now he's trying to make up for lost time, but it really did a lot of damage to the gay community. So, but at least he, you know, he fessed up to it. So that's a good thing. Very controversial. The next one is, like I mentioned before, presidents and psychopaths. What's the similarity on here? And they said, the researchers for, and this is from Forbes magazine, the trait that is common between presidents and psychopaths, and these are only a small list of the presidents here that qualified for this. I guess the biggest one was Theodore Roosevelt, who, after he got shot during a speech, kept on going with the speech. So I guess that's pretty gutsy, right? How many people would be doing that? So anyways, this fearless dominance is a boldness associated with psychopathy. Researchers say that when they found a psychological makeup of presidents, it's associated with better rated presidential performance, leadership, persuasiveness, crisis management, congressional relations, and allied variables. It's also associated with several largely or entirely objective indicators of presidential performance, such as initiating new projects and being viewed as a world figure. So I guess in their view, it's better to be a little bit crazy. And I shouldn't use that word lightly here, but You know, when you're talking about psychopaths and comparing them with presidents who are successful, that's really fascinating. But yeah, this was from Journal of Personality and Social Psychology from, I believe, 2012. So, okay, so the next one is what's called Why Jerks Get Ahead. And we would like to admit that that probably doesn't happen, but it does. And we wouldn't like to see it, but it's just the way that they, I guess, push their weight around and everything else. But I guess they did some research on bullies for, you know, at least adult bullies. Hopefully, you know, this isn't true all the way around, because who wants to be hanging around a rude person, right? Or working for one. That's the worst, right? So, the next one is how stress damages your mental health. And yeah, I think we can all agree with that one, right? I mean, the more stress that we have, it's harder to get over things, and it just takes us a lot more and just wears us down. So, but it's, you know, they're saying that stress causes release of chemicals that impair the function of the prefrontal cortex. Again, you know, your area of higher functioning in planning and, you know, really your computer for a lot of your brain. So when we experience acute stress, these chemicals, including cortisol and norepinephrine, are heightened and our reactive tendencies get muted. And they mute our reflective tendencies, and it leads to everything from anxiety to aggression to depression. So do things to take care of yourself and get some relaxation in on a regular basis. I was watching this one program on PBS yesterday, and it was a doctor talking about, you know, different ways to keep yourself healthy. And one of the meditations that she was teaching her audience, I really liked. It was just breathing in and then breathing out and using like a mantra, some word that is going to help you to relax. Even if you breathe out and said relax under your breath. I mean, you can do this anywhere, but she recommended to do this 10 to 20 minutes a day. And they were showing over a few weeks' time that it lowered blood pressure and decreased stress for people who were doing this on a regular basis. And I have seen a lot of studies that have mentioned meditation. And there's so many different ways to meditate that it's really pretty easy to do. It's not like you have to sit down and have a special place and have it completely quiet and completely empty your mind of thoughts, because a lot of times that doesn't happen. I mean, for seasoned meditators, that can work, but it takes a long time to get to that point. So, you know, you can even be doing like a walking meditation if, you know, just feel every step that you take, just get in touch with yourself, with feeling like you're in the here and now, and try to do it whenever you can on a daily basis. That would be great. It's probably going to help you in the long run. So I definitely recommend some meditation for everybody and for all the clients that I've worked with. I've even taught little children how to do what we call the 60 seconds, and it was great. They really liked it. In fact, the kids would turn around and teach their parents how to do 60 seconds. So it was really good. It was just, you know, creating a nice, quiet, safe place in their heads and doing a lot of deep breathing. So it definitely helped. So we are going to take a commercial break right now. And if you want to call in, it's 800-893-9562.
The Chicago School of Professional Psychology offers numerous psychology, behavioral, and health-related science graduate degrees at three campuses: Los Angeles, California, including branches in Westwood and Irvine, Chicago, Illinois, and Washington, D.C., and online. The Chicago School prepares students to meet the ever-changing mental health needs of society through classroom experience and real-world training. The Chicago School Counseling Centers in Irvine and Westwood provide caring, confidential, and affordable psychological services to individuals and their families. For more information, visit thechicagoschool.edu.
You are listening to Skid Row Studios.
I'm not doing it with you.
Please do it with me.
Fuck that.
Can you please have sex with me?
At Skid Row Studios?
At Skid Row Studios.
Maybe. Okay.
Hi, thanks for joining me on Psych 101. My name is Julianne Good. I have a Master of Arts in Marriage and Family Therapy, and I'm currently doing my internship right now. So, and thank you so much for supporting the show and myself and Skid Row Studios over the year. It's been great. So we do have a caller on the line. Hi, how are you?
Hi, Julianne. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm good. I just wanted to call in and say we've really enjoyed your shows, and we love what you're doing. It's so important. You know, we don't hear much about psychology in real life. I mean, really applicable to help people in the world, and I think that's so important to just talk about it and introduce topics for laymen to understand and be able to call in and ask questions. And I was really happy to hear about your stress meditation topic, something very near and dear to my heart. I just want to say how important it is to keep at it. You know, it took me many years before I was able to see. I'm in a 12-step program, and it's part of the 11th step, the meditation, and I've always ignored it at my own peril for many years, and I just started doing it. After 20 years of sobriety, I just started to do it on a regular basis, and I wish I'd started many years ago, because it's just been such a boon to my program and my spirituality and my life, especially, you know, I'm unemployed and it's a kind of a stressful time. And I just wanted to say that it's just something that's not talked about or valued in our culture.
Right. And thank you for sharing. That was, you know, God, 20 years sobriety. Good for you. That's incredible. That
Thanks.
Is really incredible. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and sometimes, and you know, you have a good point. Sometimes it takes us a little while to get back on track again, because, you know, life gets in the way, or excuses get in the way, or whatever. You know, we know it's good for us, but we're not quite there. And I think sometimes we need to be in tune of everything happens at its own timing. Would you agree?
Yes, and my sponsor was always, I would always say, I don't have time, and she'd say, well, do you have 5 minutes in the morning? And I'd be like, yeah. Everybody has 5 minutes, you know?
Right.
And it's a habit that you have to establish, but you have to value it first. And it's so hard in our fast-paced culture where everybody, I think, has an internet addiction or some kind of email addiction. I see that a lot today. And it's, I don't know, it's sad to me, especially with the younger generation, always on their texting and email. And we've really gotten away from being present in the moment, which is what meditation is. It's just being present in the moment. And that our whole culture has lost that desire. And I've done a lot of reading on Eckhart Tolle, who is a master of this process. And even I honestly have trouble with it because most people live in past worry or future fear. So being present in the moment is something that meditation can help with.
Right. And you think about it, that's all that we have is right now. That's it. I mean, we can sit there and think back to the past. We can plan for the future. But honestly, this is it.
You know, and it's just not taught, or it's just not something that is, I find it hard to explain. It's just not something that we're brought up to do. We're brought up to worry about the past and dream about the future, but very seldom are we taught the value of the present moment, and just to be present is something that is really lost today in our fast-paced culture, and it's sad because that's where the joy is.
So do you turn around and teach people about meditation? No. By that sound of the laugh.
I would like to do TM, but part of me is just so mad that it costs so much money to learn how to do that. You know, I have a friend who did it and swears up and down by it, but I was like, she got a cut rate deal and it was only like $600 or something. Why do they charge for that? Isn't that like, I don't know, wrong somehow?
Because it's America.
Do that. But you said earlier about a word, or there's so many different ways that staring at a candle or counting breaths, which is what I do, is I count breaths. And then when thoughts come, I don't beat myself up about it. I just not like let them go. I used to be so frustrated when I was meditating because my head is so noisy, and I would just stop, you know, because it's so for other people, and I'm just too tense and anxious. But that's why I say that it's so important to stick with it. Establish it as a habit, 5 minutes every morning. Like, you wouldn't go without brushing your teeth in the morning, so you try and make meditation that important as well.
Right, that's a really good recommendation. I like that. And also, you know, you can meditate while you're driving. I mean, of course, you're not going to be closing your eyes and you're going off into the Netherlands or anything, but, you know, you can at least do slow, concentrated breathing, even like on a count of four, a count of eight, or whatever feels natural to you, and get into the habit of that, especially if you're sitting in busy traffic and you're sitting at a traffic light and you've got a red. What can you do? Yeah. You can just get in touch with yourself.
The way I always start my meditation is I inhale for 10, like count of 10, hold for count of 10, and then release for count of 10. That basically will just relax you right off the bat, you know, just to get out of the, you know, stress of your routine or day or wherever you are. Just that counting, holding, releasing is a good way to start. And I have to do that when I'm driving. Sometimes it's so frustrating in Los Angeles. The traffic is crazy. And people are aggressive and rude. And, you know, not getting sucked into that is, it's hard. I mean, I've 20 years of sobriety and I have to resist flipping people.
Especially in LA, right?
I have to work. I want to. And then I think, I feel shitty afterwards. So I don't do it, but it's definitely a benefit, and it would be a good New Year's resolution for all you people looking for a way to make 2014 a little less stressful.
Exactly. And that's a great recommendation. Thank you. I really, really like that.
Well, thank you, Julianne. Looking forward to your 2014 episodes. Do you have any previews of what you're going to be up to?
The end of the sort show. Of, yes. It's all a secret at this point, though.
Well, we are looking forward to hearing a lot more of you in 2014.
Thank you so much, and have a wonderful, wonderful new year, okay?
Happy New Year to you too, Julianne.
All right.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. Well, thank you. I enjoyed that call, and I agree, you know, incorporating some meditation is always a really good thing, and it's free. And if you don't quite know how to get started, there's a lot of YouTube videos even on how you can start getting, you know, into meditation, or even better, just, you know, just do it with other people. That would be fun, you know, because if you go to yoga classes, most of the times they have a meditation at the end of it. And I always think of doing yoga as like a self-massage. You feel like great afterwards. You're stretched out and you feel much more freedom of movement. And there's many different forms of yoga also. So, yeah. So take care of yourself. That's a free way of doing it. So, yeah, take advantage of it anytime you can. I'm a big believer in meditation. So, if anybody else would like to call, that would be wonderful. I'd love to hear from you. It's 800-893-9562. Join me. And, you know, I'd love to hear from you and throw things in here. I think in the meantime, I'm going to go through some interesting facts about anxiety and depression, because I think those are the two biggies that for mental health can really drain us. And it doesn't need to be. I think it can be changed. I again, get in touch with where you are and give yourself some room. Give yourself some compassion when you're having a downtime, because everybody has downtimes. That's just part of being a human. And we have a lot of situations pulling at us at this very moment. So, you know, just be kind to yourself. That's my number one thing, right? Be kind. So these are fascinating facts about anxiety. Okay. So anxiety literally makes everything stink. Oh, yeah. So if you're eating and it just doesn't taste right, doesn't smell right, maybe you're having some anxiety. Maybe that's your brain's way of saying, hey, wake up. You know, you need to shift gears here. But it says, as people get more anxious, they are more likely to label neutral smells as bad smells. So it says, anxiety literally makes the world stink. That's lovely, huh? But I can understand this, right? The next is exercise reduces anxiety. And exercise also reduces depression too. So you're getting a double benefit, which is awesome. But it says as little as 20 minutes can make you feel calmer right now. The benefits of a little workout extend beyond the gym into everyday life. One study has found that although simply resting reduces anxiety, it doesn't help protect against stressful events. Exercise seems to have a more lasting effect, and it helps to reduce anxiety when faced with stressful situations afterwards. So the newer doctors, the newer, you know, thinking doctors here are starting to incorporate exercise, and hopefully more exercise and less anti-anxiety medications and antidepressants, right? That would be great. So, and this information, by the way, is coming from SciBlog, which is from England. And I've explored some of their writings and stuff. It's pretty good. I really like it. I really agreed with a lot of what they had to say. This is, you know, very simple things that you can do for yourself, which is great. Next one is the parental effect. It says, like many things, high anxiety is partly in the genes. But part of the reason anxious people are anxious is because of their parents' behavior, which I agree with. I've worked with some kids that were fine on their own. And then once their parents came along, if mom and or dad were, you know, anxious or worrying about a lot of things, then they took it on too immediately. It was really interesting to see that. So children are more likely to be anxious when their parents direct criticism at them, display high levels of doubt, and are emotionally cold. And I would add in that adults are also like that too, right? Who likes to be criticized and have, you know, have people around them who are emotionally cold and not, you know, accepting and loving of them. That's really difficult for adults also. So the next one is think differently. One of the best ways of reducing anxiety is to think about situations differently. Most situations can be reframed, and studies show that people who do this naturally, as opposed to trying to suppress their anxiety, feel less anxious in stressful social situations. There's a mouthful, right? Anyways, yes. So if you're feeling anxious, just admit it to yourself. Admit it to the people around you. You know, it's not a bad thing. I think it's more difficult to just push it down and try to deny or ignore that you're in that place. It's okay. It really is. And there's nothing to be ashamed about. We all go through anxious times. And I think with everything that's going on in the world right now, there's just a lot of anxiety producing situations if we let them happen. If we let too much affect us, it can just eat away at our own peacefulness, right? The next one is anxious people jump to conclusions. Highly anxious people jump to conclusions more quickly when judging facial expressions. And it says that anxious people may have problems in their relationships because they jump to conclusions too quickly when they're trying to read other people's faces. They misinterpret what the other person is trying to communicate through their nonverbal messages. So again, I guess it's just one of those things. And, you know, if you're, you know, feeling like you're going to leap off the planet when, you know, somebody says something that you don't like, then maybe it's time to start doing that meditation, right? That would definitely help. Just anything, you know, to ground you at the moment instead of jumping to conclusions too much. Now, this one was pretty interesting. Is anxiety affects balance. I never knew this one, but people who experience more severe levels of anxiety also have problems with their balance. They sometimes feel dizzy for no apparent reason, and they sway more than normal. So if you're feeling dizzy, maybe, you know, if it's not like an inner ear situation or something, maybe you should ask yourself what you're feeling emotionally, how much anxiety you're going through. And here we go. Meditation reduces anxiety. So it says 4 20-minute meditation classes were enough to reduce anxiety by up to 39%. Wow. And the last one is anxiety expands personal space. That people who are feeling anxious need a bigger safety margin than normal. They need more space around them. And I thought that was interesting too. I am thinking about doing this maybe once every few weeks, because every once in a while I have one of my guests cancels out last minute or too booked up or something. So let me know if you like this. Email me at jgoode8@verizon.net or contact the station at 800-893-9562 if you'd like to have another session with this, because I didn't even get through half of what I was going to get through. But I really highly appreciate you listening. I hope you continue listening in 2014. I think we're going to have more intriguing guest and themes, and we're going to be hitting up a lot of psychological situations straight on. I want to give my sincere thanks to a list of people that I am really totally close to and who have kept me going for years and have been supportive. Chap Cooper, Alex Good, my son, Cynthia Correa, and Grace Artin, long time friends. Thank you so much to Jeremy Hansen, who is the executive producer of Skid Row Studios. My board op, Jenny Guzman. She rocks. I love her. And my professional team, Dante Dion, who is in charge of my website, Jeff Adamo, who is my photographer, Jarvis Sams, who did the voiceover for the Chicago School of Professional Psychology commercial, and Sean Lewis, who played guitar for the same commercial, and Carolyn Aguayo from the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, who has been my public relations person between the station and the Chicago School. I really highly appreciate your listenership. Have a fantastic 2014. Go make your dreams come true. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. Bye now.